Diversity.
Years of course, confusion.
Oh, precious Lord.
Well, hello everyone and welcome. I can't waste much time, for we have a lot to get through today and I have to be out of here to conduct an interview with a very special guest soon. So it cannot go beyond four. So we have a hard finish and I've got quite a lot of material to get through. Just before I get going, I'll remind everyone, pick up my new book, Applied Elite Theory. Pick up a course at the academic agency, Trivium, Foundations of Economics. I'll play an ad. And when I come back, I'm going to really break open this BBC story. And there's one principle I want you to get through your minds. In fact, while this ad is playing, repeat it over and over and over and over again in your head. The phrase I want you to repeat is, your anger, their agenda. Your anger, their agenda. Or if you want, my anger, their agenda. My anger, their agenda. My anger, their agenda. Repeat it over and over and over again. My anger, their agenda. My anger, their agenda. Just repeat it over and over and over and over again. Write it in the chat, say it in your head, repeat it over and over. Watch the trivia ad, and when I come back, I'm gonna break this story wide open.
Now from the academic agency.
You still repeating it? Your anger, their agenda. My anger, their agenda. Your anger, their agenda. My anger, their agenda. Let's break down exactly what this means. What is your anger? What are you angry about? Why is it that you don't like the BBC? Okay? You don't like the BBC because they've gone woke, right? You don't like the BBC because they fired Jeremy Clarkson and they changed Top Gear from being like the Top Gear lads back in the day to being what they are. But whatever, I don't even know if Top Gear still exists, okay? You don't like the BBC. You're angry at the BBC because they made Doctor Who black. Well, they made Doctor Who a woman, right? You don't like the BBC because they run stupid little articles saying, oh, the countryside is too white and shit like this, okay? And so you're angry at the BBC because the BBC, you know, has had a bit of a moment there with its wokery. You want to see it destroyed, or you think it's an enemy or whatever. You think it's this kind of horrible dive of leftism that's seeking to destroy your heritage and culture. You know, you hate the BBC because they made a Viking black or something, okay? That's your anger. That's how your rage at the BBC can be harnessed for their agenda. What's their agenda? Their agenda is pretty simple. Support the nation of Israel, okay? Harness your anger to support the nation of Israel. That's basically the gambit over and over again. Now, what the hell is this story, the BBC story, got to do with Israel? Actually, it's got everything to do with Israel. In fact, it's solely to do with Israel. Let us, and remember, ostensibly, the story is about an edit of Donald Trump. You have to remember, though, Trump's law is absolute. What is Trump's law? Everything he does for them. Well, repeat it. Everything he does for them. Repeat it. Everything he does for them. What is Trump's law? Everything he does for them. Okay, what is the issue? Who are the players involved? Let's get into it, shall we? Let's just get into it. Everything about this story is about one man, okay? The man is called Robbie Gibb, okay? Robbie Gibb. He is the owner of the Jewish Chronicle. Back in July, 400, and he was appointed, he was also the director of communications for Theresa May under the Tories. The political parties are able to appoint people to the BBC board. So the director general or the director for England or the England pick or something for the BBC, the Tory stuck in this bloke, Robbie Gibb. Okay, Robbie Gibb, owner of the Jewish Chronicle. And Robbie Gibb, surprise, surprise, is a friend to the nation of Israel. And Robbie Gibb did not like the way that BBC journalists were reporting on Gaza. So back in July, and I'll just share my screen here. Back in July. Hold on a minute. So here we are. Here's The Guardian. All right. More than 400 media figures, including Alexei Sale and Mike Lee and various other lovies and so on, signed a letter urging the BBC to get rid of this guy Gibb. Get rid of Robbie Gibb because he's causing an absolute problem. Okay? He's causing a problem. That was the story back in July of this year. Fast forward now, and surprise, surprise, there has been a coup at the BBC leading to the director general resigning, the head of news resigning, and various other people resigning over this issue. Now, the rabbit hole on this one goes fairly deep. I found this article. Here is an audio version of an article showing exactly who Robin Gibb is. We're not going to watch it all, but we're going to watch about 5 minutes of this together. I'm not going to interrupt it. I'm going to let it play. And then I've got various other clips to show exactly what this issue is about. Okay. Remember, your anger, but their agenda. Let's carry on.
The government captured the BBC. A right-wing cabal, largely unaccountable, is waging war on the principles that made our public broadcaster great. It must not succeed. Written by Alan Rusbridger, published on Prospect Magazine, January 24th, 2024. The editor of the Jewish Chronicle is not a great fan of the BBC. Jake Wallace Simons, appointed in 2021 after a bitter contest over the ownership of the paper, believes that the corporation has given up on impartiality in its coverage of Israel and Gaza. He gave a sense of the Jewish Chronicle view in a scathing recent article in Spiked under the headline, "The BBC's Israelophobia is out of control."
So, Spiked magazine editorial line now, dictating who gets to run the BBC. Let's carry on.
Its distrust of the Jewish state is bordering on pathological. He's not alone. There have been numerous criticisms of the BBC's journalism, including over the editorial reluctance to use the term terrorist to describe Hamas. Broad complaints of this nature eventually end up with the most influential of the BBC board's subcommittees, the Editorial Guidelines and Standards Committee. And this is where the BBC's recent history and its tortuous and contested governance become fascinatingly murky. Two members of the four-strong committee have little or no grounding in journalism, the Director General, Tim Davie, and the chair, former Tate Gallery boss Nicholas Sirota. Another, Deborah Turnus, is head of news, and thus, at least in the eyes of those who believe that the BBC has been getting things wrong, part of the problem. You might say the same of Davie as editor-in-chief. Which leaves just one member of the committee who is both uninvolved in daily decision-making and has a background in news. Step forward, Sir Robbie Gibb, a non-executive director of the BBC since 2021, and easily the most influential external voice on the board, and apparently owner of the Jewish Chronicle. Sir Robbie is a stickler for what he regards as impartiality. He is reported to have told Newsnight staff that if they wanted to peddle their own agendas, they should get stuffed and leave. But he is a curious figure to have emerged as the ultimate arbiter of impartiality at our most venerable public service broadcaster. There is, he would be the first to admit, nothing impartial about his politics. Until 2019, he was the official Downing Street spokesman for Theresa May's Tory government.
Okay, so you're getting you're building up a picture of who this guy is, okay? And the left were onto him. So that was written in January 2024. And then in the summer, there were a spate of other kind of left-wing hits on Robbie Gibb, you know, around this pressure letter that was signed by journalists to get rid of him as a malign influence within the BBC. So let's watch a couple of these videos, and then we'll fast forward to the current fallout.
The Jewish Chronicle's fabricated reporting and its relationship with BBC board member Robbie Gibb is putting the public broadcaster's impartiality under scrutiny.
The Jewish Chronicle, frankly, as has been shown by the revelation that it employed a journalist who was party to fabricating 9 stories, has been nothing short of an activist outlet that essentially echoes and reinforces, amplifies the messages that comes out not just from Israel, but particularly the lines taken by the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
So when I say it is solely about this, I mean it is solely about this. Once again, repeat. Your anger, their agenda. Your anger, their agenda. It is solely about this. We will fast forward soon. I just want to play a few more of these clips.
Robbie Gibb sits on the BBC's Board of Editorial Standards Committee, and up until the 20th of August 2024, just a month ago, he was the sole director of the Jewish Chronicle, something that was stated as a declaration of personal interest in his BBC bio. His responsibilities, according to the BBC, include acting in the public interest and exercising independent judgment. The Jewish Chronicle just earlier this month published articles based on fabricated documents by an author who was a former Israeli soldier.
So for Robin Gibb, in that position, who is obviously central to the Jewish Chronicle, he led the consortium that took it over.
Right, so my question right now is, what you doing, MI5? What you doing, MI6? Right, this is happening in broad daylight. You're just going to, you know, take this line. Like, this is obviously somebody working on behalf of foreign interests, taking over one of our venerable institutions in this country from accurately reporting on atrocities that have been going on in the Middle East. You can see it's an activist outlet. You can see what's going on, and you can see that this bloke is an activist. Anyway, let's carry on.
But we don't know who was financially backing this. For him to be in any way involved, as he has been, with editorial standards and coverage of the Middle East, is a clear conflict of interests. Yes, he did declare this, but he should not have participated, as he has done, in any discussions about BBC coverage of the Middle East. I think that going forward, the BBC, the chairman of the BBC, he's newly appointed, needs to be very robust. Robbie Gibb cannot be involved in the corporation's discussions on the Middle East, involved in any way.
So you see, there was an institutional push to get rid of Robbie Gibb. And what he did was, instead, Scorpion stinged it back around to coup the corporation. That's basically what's happened here, right? In what they came for him, and like a snake with the backing of the Zionist network in Britain, he has instead tried to come for the BBC to try to get it to become yet another version of Julia Hartley Brewer in the ongoing Julia Hartley Brewerization of this nation. Again, repeat, your anger, their agenda. Your anger, their agenda, on issue after issue after issue after issue. And you will fall for it, 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 and you will fall for it. Okay, I just want you to go out in the world and be an absolute pest. Your anger, their agenda. Your anger, their agenda. Your anger, their agenda. Over and over again. Let's have a look at what Robbie Gibb was like in day-to-day life at the BBC.
See, Robbie Gibb, you know, made my life really difficult day after
Robbie
day.
Gibb is the former director of communications for Theresa May,
yeah.
who then went to be on the board of the BBC.
Former communications.
And also helped found a rival broadcaster, GB News.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know...
So one of the founders of GB News and the former director of communications for the Tory party went on somehow to sit on the board of the BBC and then got to opine on partiality questions about how the BBC covers Israel when he's literally the owner of the Jewish Chronicle, an activist pro Netanyahu rag. You getting all this? You got it yet? And I'm going to keep on hitting you over the head with it until it goes in. I don't want to hear anything else. Your anger, their agenda.
Not really talked about this before. He made my life really, really hard at the BBC. You know, day after day, I would hear from people saying, you know, just watch it. Robbie's watching you. Now, you know, because they had created this sort of confection that somehow I was sort of Labour supporting or, you know, doing Labour stuff. You know, by comparison to Robbie Gibb, my sort of grand summit within the Labour Party was, you know, vice chair of Birmingham Northfield CLP and youth officer when I was...
So there's more, I mean, there's so many more of these...
I think the BBC...
...clips. This one from Alistair Campbell is important because that role, director of communications, is literally the identical role that Alistair Campbell himself held under Tony Blair. So it is the equivalent of Labour appointing Alistair Campbell personally as the as sitting on the BBC board. Let's listen to this.
He has lost his confidence. I think it panders to those who seek to destroy it. And I'm afraid I think that's what this is about. I think that this is going to lead to questions about the governance of the BBC. And let's just focus on one of the key characters here, Roy, Robbie Gibb. Robbie Gibb, and I wonder whether you had anything to do with Robbie Gibb when he was Director of Communications to Theresa May. He's on the board, and to my mind, and he's appointed as one of what's called the national appointees. He's there for England. And these appointments, so the appointment of the chairman, Samir Shah, and these national appointments, they're made by government. And then mm-hmm. the other appointments to the board are made by and from within the BBC. Mm-hmm. And Robbie Gibb being there is honestly like, so Theresa May was Prime Minister, he was her Director of Communications. He's got a long track record of being a very, very active political figure in all sorts of areas, including Gaza and Israel through his senior role at the Jewish Chronicle. And he's there. It is as though he's appointed under Boris Johnson. It is as though when Gordon Brown was Prime Minister, I was appointed. Now, sure. Can you imagine? Can you imagine what the outcry would have been on these papers you've mentioned? The Telegraph, The Mail, The Sun, The Express. They would have gone completely berserk.
If Alistair Campbell had been put on the board of the BBC.
Yeah, see, it's a tremendous point. It is a correct point. People, you know, all of you people would be going crazy if Alistair Campbell was appointed as a director at the BBC. But on this, we're meant to just look over the fact that, you know, I mean, Boris Johnson, do we like him? Do we like the Tory party? Do we like any of these scumbags? Do you like people who are just like blatant, open Israeli operatives working here in the UK? Do you support all that? So why are you all cheering all of this on? You're cheering it all on because it's been framed. It has been wrapped up in the slop of Trump, basically. It's been wrapped up in the slop of Trump to sell it. But in his appearance on Newsnight, Jacob Rees-Mogg made it abundantly clear that it's not about Trump, right? It's not about Trump. It is, as per Trump's law, always about that little country in the Middle East. Here's
BBC has...
Here's Mogg. Oh, hold on. Let's get Mogg talking about exactly what's gone wrong here.
important because...
No, of course it is. I'm not dismissing the importance of it. I'm just talking about 12 seconds
the reason
in thousands of hours of broadcasting over 3 years.
I'll tell you why it's so important. It's important because it's hard evidence. Most of what one says about bias on the BBC is circumstantial. It's I think this, you think that. This is hard evidence, as is perhaps even more seriously...
More importantly, even more serious. I'm going to make him say it again. Even more serious. Even more importantly. More importantly. More importantly.
More seriously, the mass graves in Gaza, which the BBC...
Oh, right. Actually, it's all about that. Yet again. How come this dipshit can see it, but you can't?
Director General Tim Davies, a former Conservative activist. The political reporting of the BBC, as well as reporting on Israel's genocide, is a travesty. But for the likes of The Telegraph, and for Rupert Murdoch's newspapers, and the Daily Mail, the very existence of the BBC is an affront. They want to get rid of it altogether. Now, strikingly, according to David Yellen, the former editor of The Sun newspaper, the fall of Tim Davies is a victory for populists, for a cabal of toxic plotters with links to the BBC board, who designed and executed a coup, and a circular firing squad in the UK press. It is not a good day for our values or our country. And meanwhile, the pro-Israel lobby wants to ensure that the British media is universally and unapologetically pro-Israel and to stigmatise any deviation from them. They are now...
Ding, 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 he got it right. Even homosexual shit-lib Owen Jones can see it, but you can't. Because Doctor Who is a woman now. Fucking brilliant. That's how easy you are to trick. It's incredible. Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. And what's so fascinating about this, though, is that it was actually a counter... Like, the left came for him, and then he counterpunched with this kind of coup maneuver. There's a couple of old videos buried, like, on YouTube. I found these old videos. One of them actually included Kevin Logan. Now, I haven't seen Kevin Logan in about a decade, but Kevin Logan was on this story. Let me see. I think it's in this one. Hold on.
Right. So it's not every day that the BBC, the self-styled bastion of British impartiality, as it supposedly is, finds itself accused of censorship and racism by the very journalists it employs. But when over 100 of its own staff take the unprecedented step of calling out the broadcaster for acting like...
No, hold on a minute. Hold on. It was this one. Kevin Logan is on this one. Hold on.
Seeing through the pro-Israel bias at the BBC. Over 400 celebrities and media personalities risked
I want to find Kevin Logan. Hold on. Yeah, here's Logan. All right, hold on.
Extreme Zionist Jewish Chronicle that leaked fake news stories from Benjamin Netanyahu himself through freelance writer Elon Perry. Kevin, what do you make of this letter? I mean, it seems more and more people are waking up to the pro-Israel connections at the BBC, including 111 BBC journalists.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that somebody's waking up. I'm glad that there is some pushback now, because the BBC has really shown itself in a very poor light. Not only does it not have the kind of moderation and kind of neutral way of approaching this, as it would with virtually any other topic in the world, it is clearly and obviously been co-opted by Zionists for their own purposes. We've seen, as you say, the individual Gibb on the board there who...
How have we come to a point where Kevin Logan is telling the truth? Kevin Logan is the one who sees the situation clearly. He analyzes the power plays and he sees the situation for what it is. While all of the head-banging, slop-brained, easily influenced right-wing are just slurping this up as some sort of victory in the culture war. Because let me tell you, they released, right, a document with thousands of words in it. And my buddy Scrump went through that document, and the vast majority, about 60% of it, was about Gaza. There was a little bit on trans. Right, there was a little bit on trans, and there was a little bit on Trump, right? A bit on Trump and a bit on trans, but the vast majority on it, and a bit, and some weird little section on how many men had appeared on Women's Hour or something, okay? Something like this. But the majority of it, about 60% of the document, was on Gaza. Not one word was about anti-white bias in the BBC. Not one word on, you know, pushing a BLM or any of this sort of stuff. It was solely about this. Remember, your anger, their agenda. You think you're winning some massive victory in the culture war? You're not. All you're doing is handing over one of our British institutions over to an enemy. Over to, you're giving a castle over to Zionist faction. That's all that's happening. Kevin Logan can see it, but you can't. Or even worse, you can see it and you cheer it on. Don't talk to me about Kevin Roberts of the Heritage Foundation if you're willing to just do it for free.
Should be absolutely nowhere near an oversight board, considering his connections. We've seen the fantastic reporting from Alan McLeod.
Is it just me, or does Kevin Logan look like he's in the shower or something? He looks like he's in the shower, or like there's water coming down the walls or something. It's a bit disturbing, but anyway.
About Rafi Berg, who is the was one of the main people at the editors at the Middle East News Board at the BBC, who was a person who bragged openly.
That's enough of all of this. We get the picture. I've hammered it home enough. Right, your anger, their agenda. You're just, all you're doing is helping foreign powers gain hold and control over our institutions. The people in the right on this are Owen Jones, Ed Davey, who's taken a brave and principled stand, journalists at the BBC standing up for you know, the integrity of their own war reporting. Because ultimately, this is what this whole issue is about. If it wasn't for Gaza, this would not be happening, right? Robbie Gibb doesn't give a shit about any of your concerns whatsoever. Mass immigration. This is literally a Boris Johnson operative. Okay? Absolute nonsense for people to be presenting this as some sort of culture war victory when it's not. Okay? I'm here to tell you things that nobody else is going to do in these sorts of spaces, okay? Anyway, where is he? All I can think about, more and more, I think about this clip here, unironically. Where's old Ed? Okay, yeah, here we are.
Get the hell out of our politics and our country.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's the coup at the BBC. There are a lot of super chats and super thanks to deal with, because if you remember last week, I skipped them. I've got, you know, we've got about 90 minutes here to get through them all. Let's see if I can. Smoking, I've taken to smoking in the Monte Cristo 3 on the office hours quite a lot recently. Burned through this box. Only got about six left of a box of 25. I'm really into the Monte Cristo 3 at the moment. Anyway, let us do this then. So about 14 days ago, let's start here. Why we must challenge mainstream political narratives. KFNSDJ says, if you want to annihilate the left-right socio-intellectual prison, then stop using right-coded imagery. Your thumbnails give a right-wing vibe. What? How do my thumbnails give a right-wing vibe? Which diminishes the number of left and liberal identifying individuals interested in them. Your PFP and thumbnails also come across as old-fashioned due to the style of the text and the symbolism used. The blue and black color scheme diminishes the pop required to attract a larger and younger audience. It's called an IQ filter, mate. It's an IQ filter is what it is. I would recommend you reduce Gen X-isms as well to appeal to a younger and larger audience. Don't fall for the sunk cost fallacy and put expansion first. Oh, all right, mate. Well, okay, all right. I'll take it on board. Maybe I'll put some fucking rainbow unicorns in my thumbnails. Where's the guy who did my graphics? Mate, what I need is, I need that black and white AA logo in unicorn rainbow colours, okay? And just for you, I'm going to make my thumbnails multicolored next week so the colors pop. Would you like that? And instead of white and yellow, I'll use pink and green as my colors. Would that make you happy? Would that make it pop? Would that make it more appealing to Taylor Swift fans? How about get the fuck out of here? Right. James Goodwin says, so I know you're trying to be helpful, but Jesus Christ. You're like that bloke in the thick of it who comes in with his, you know, with his height, with his new gadgets. And, oh, here's a new and modern way of doing politics. Sit around the circle and sing Kumbaya. If you want that, you're in the wrong place. James Goodwin says, this probably doesn't apply. So this is on Britain Then versus Now, what the BBC archives expose. Very good reason for saving the BBC, by the way, is to save the archives. Okay, is to save the archives. He says, James Goodwin says, this probably does not apply to the lighthouse keeper example, given how critical a role it was, but a lot of smaller jobs provided by the state back in the day were the equivalent of welfare. Make sure, I tell you what, right? How about for the next month, just for you, KFNSDJ, I stick a picture of my own face, soy mouthing in every single, how about that? A little reaction shot, soy face with a big red arrow pointing to stuff, like Russell Brand. Would that be good for you? Would you approve of that? Yeah. James Goodwin, this probably doesn't apply to the lighthouse keeper example, given how critical a role it was, but a lot of the smaller jobs provided by the state back in the day were the equivalent of welfare, making sure everyone had a job, however small, within society. Think of the station porters at pretty well every station who helped load your luggage into the train. If you go to China today, there is effectively no welfare. You'll see people coming to collect your rubbish daily. The state is paying them to do something useful rather than sit at home on their behinds. Though I wouldn't say they take the same pride in their work as the British back in the day, most people are pretty surly. Present-day Japan might be a better example. Well, interestingly, James, the guest I'm speaking to later today, whose identity I shall keep a mystery for now, is actually coming on to talk all about China, what life is like there after he's been there. So it's going to be all about China, my interview later today. So maybe I'll find out. This is on last week's Office Hours. Thanks for the stream, AA. And thank you for your measured response to my long question about Christianity. I will attempt to establish an Anglo-New Geneva as the boomers die out and the church is taken over by Zoomers. I will report back in 20 years. If I am never heard from again, you will know the Dark Lord and his security apparatus have triumphed. All right, Lord of Norska, good luck, good luck. Lewis Shaw Moffat says, seize the means of independence, comrade. This is from Why We Must Challenge Mainstream Political Narratives. Absolutely. Helios on last week's Deepest Lord 2 weeks ago says, will you do a Crusader Kings 3 stream? I'd love to say I will, but I'm so busy that I just don't get... You know, I bought that Steam Deck, right? I bought that Steam Deck and I don't get a look in. I got AAA playing Fields of Mystria, right? And because AAA has been playing Fields of Mystria, now the missus has kind of got involved and has started her own career on there. So AAA plays it. She goes to bed. Then the missus is on there. It's 11 o'clock. I haven't had a look in. I can't even get a look in on my own Steam Deck. Situation's so bad, I'm considering buying another one. Setting them up on a family account, it'd be like, bugger off and go and play on your own Steam Deck. Jamie Smith says, hello, AA, on the same video, why we must challenge mainstream political narratives. He says, first time commenting, I've been watching you for about a year now. Well, thank you very much, Jamie. After being made aware of you from watching the Lotus Eaters. And I am now a daily viewer, as I enjoy your neutral political commentary that sees through the slop on both sides of the political spectrum. Well, high praise indeed, sir. I enjoy listening to your expertise on the Dark Lord, Tony Blair. And you've convinced me to buy his leadership book to learn more about his powers. Yes, you can learn much from there. Even though I can't stand him and everything he did to Britain and the wider world, you've got to respect him in being the successful leader he was and getting stuff done. Recently, I sent a 6x4 frame portrait of the Dark Lord, which is signed by Tone himself, down to the Lotus Eaters in Swindon with instructions for them to gift it. I will when I'm next in Swindon, I cannot wait to receive that. When you're next down there visiting, I think it will be a great addition to your bookshelf case and you'll appreciate it. All right, I will. If I get that, I will put it up behind me on the video so he's constantly watching, like how they used to put up pictures of Lenin everywhere in the Soviet Union. I gotta have a Tone on my shelf. Thank you very much, Jamie. On the Lighthouse video, Canal Toll Housekeeper would have been my choice one day. You missed half of my super chat again yesterday, so I'll try again. The online right can't come to terms with the fact that the adverts do accurately reflect the cities, which is where the shops are. Advertisers aren't daft. Glenn G has balls of steel. That's Greenwald. Don't forget, he broke the Snowden story and risked his life. Who cares how gay he is after that? I absolutely agree, Gazmo. Thank you very much for the super thanks, sir. Also on the Lighthouse video, clearly this one didn't do huge in views, but the people who did watch it, I think, hit something with them. Tom says, AA, have you read Zygmunt Bauman's Liquid Modernity? I picked it up after John Gray mentioned it in a recent video. Very interesting book so far. I've only just read the foreword, and he mentions Max Weber and Thomas Carlyle all in the same paragraph. According to him, our current state of modernity is post-panoptical. There is no longer the same mutual engagement between capital and labour, as things have become more marketized and technocratic. The global elite are essentially absentee landlords. Made me think of Blair's digital ID as much more hands-off technocratic management, quite dark. That sounds like a very good book. I will try to pick that up. I'm sure I saw Bastani mention that book recently as well. okay. Big Chaz on The Deepest Law from last week. He says Heath's win in 1970 is attributed by many to Powell remaining a Tory MP for that election. His decision not to stand for the Tories in February 1974 and advocating a vote for Labour because of a vote on the EEC, amongst other reasons, is considered a key reason for Labour winning both elections in that year. Very interesting. Very interesting indeed. This is on the North Korea military video that I did. Daniel Sweet says, I'm not sure that anything we are told about North Korea is even true. The average person always parrots the line about fake supermarkets when I bring this up. Yeah, that's because every I've been to North Korea video shows the same chaperone tour. That's why. Frayne Sustik says, this is on the Nima Parvini versus right-wing ideas 3 nationalism. Says, I've got big issues with your critiques of nationalism, or the big issue with it is that you just point out the bad. But it is a social technology that can be used for good as well. It is the reason why the gay is forced to be the empire of lies. It is the reason why much of the Russian people survived World War II. One can come up with multiple examples where it was a force for good. But don't forget what I said in that video, that Russia is already an empire. So there can be a nationalism if it's for the nationalism of an empire, which is what Comrade Stalin utilized to, you know, win the great victory in the Great War for his people. So I didn't say it doesn't have utility. I just said it's got utility for, you know, the ruling class of a nation. And unless you are a big superpower, which Russia was, you know, usually you're going to be somebody else's pawn. A noble Englishman says, if, sorry, let me phrase that, when the Dark Lord finally appears on Deepest Lore, what topic would you discuss with him the most and what questions would you ask him? So this is on my Tony Blair finally railroads through digital ID video from a while back. What would I ask the Dark Lord? I'd be like, hey, Tony, how do you keep, you know, you're a man in your 70s. How do you keep your skin in such great condition and such a full set of head of hair? No, I wouldn't. I would probably ask him serious questions about specifics of how power functions up close. Right. So we've got all these theories. We've got all these descriptions of how things work. And I would ask him directly, you know, small things that probably wouldn't occur to a lot of people. You know, like I'd ask him questions about coordination. I'd ask him questions about how actually in touch he, for example, is with the likes of Larry Ellison and things like that. Whether Blair would answer such questions. I mean, if you notice, Blair only ever has interviews in highly curated settings. So I don't think a conversation between me and the Dark Lord would ever happen like that, because he just wouldn't open himself up to ask for anyone who's going to ask difficult questions, really. Maybe if it was kind of presented to him in the right way, you know, like it'd have to be like, oh, you know, in your experience of being a leader, you know, great Machiavellian sage, you know, does it really work like this? You know, I've read a lot of, you know, but how does it actually work in practice? Maybe appealing to his ego in that way may actually get him to answer the question honestly. But Blair never opened himself up to those sorts of questions. John Walk simply says, thanks on Tucker Carlson, Nick Fuentes' video from last week. Richard Zira says, what about Clement Attlee on 10 recent British leaders worse than Tony Blair? The Town Country Planning Act of 1947 began the process of deindustrialization. Well, Richard, I need to look at Clement Attlee a bit more closely. I haven't studied that era properly, and I will do so soon. A lot of the things that Attlee set up are still with us. A lot of the things that Attlee did can be seen in terms of winding up the empire, as well as kind of, is thank you too strong a word, but kind of taking the wreckage that was left after World War II and almost like saying to the men and the women who fought that war and World War I, don't forget, yeah, we're going to need to give something back for a while. Maybe we need to give something back because we've asked a lot of you. We've just asked millions of you to die in two world wars. You've been fucked over a lot by the ruling class of this country. So there's a way of seeing Attlee in a more benevolent light, but I need to actually have a look, you know, at the actual consequences. I've got lots and lots of books on that era. I just haven't really looked into it in detail. So I'll come back to you on that. I'll just say, RJ's on the Stalin steel production video from last week. He says, thanks, AA. I'm loving the uptick in videos recently. Unfortunately, this is going to be the last week of the double up videos. I had a couple of weeks where I had excess. Do you remember I went away and then I came back? And when I came back with a huge amount of vigor and force and energy. And it meant that I had excess videos. It meant that I'd overproduced videos. So for 2 weeks, I've been able to double up. I've been doing kind of a big brain video in the morning, like these interviews that I'm running this week. And then I'm doing more. I don't want to say it's slop because I provide expert anti-slop commentary on them, but I've been able to devote time and effort to looking at the situation with Tucker Carlson and Ben Shapiro and Mark Levin and Fuentes and that, all of that in America in the evening, in the kind of for the American market, I guess you'd say. But next week, I'm not going to be able to do that. So I'll be back down to just the 4 videos rather than 8 videos, you know. But just think, it's been a bonanza. So next week, when there's a slowdown, you can go back if you've missed any of the ones. You know, I did that. I was away. I did that Nima Parvini series versus Right Wing Ideas series. And then there's been an absolute avalanche of content in November. You can next week, you can go back and watch any of the ones you've missed. Okay. But he says, I'm getting all my news more and more from one sensible and centered source. Oh, well, you flatter me too much, sir. I got my first proper job. Agriculture commutes are always enjoyable with this excellent commentary on a variety of topics. Slop commentary is an excellent rundown for everyone else to waste less time and to get the highlights. So thank you. Well, thank you very much, sir. High praise indeed. On the same Starlin video, the one on steel production from last week, he says, obviously, there is a bunch of false propaganda against the USSR, and you can take a medieval hand-tool peasant population and increase production. But the question is, like you say, compared to what? For example, if it's one guy mining iron with a pickaxe on some hill, it would be pretty hard to increase production by 1,000,000% just by bringing in 100 or so tractors mining. When you start with a much less or smaller number, it's easier to raise the number. The real question is, if Stalin just ran an industrial capitalist Chinese model, would he have gotten even more increase with less suffering? After all, when Deng Xiaoping did his reforms, it far exceeded Mao. Well, there's two things on that, really. One is that what nobody ever says is maybe the reason that Deng had his success in China is because Mao had already cleared out all the troublemakers. So that's one. He'd already dealt with the kulaks and the bourgeoisie and, you know, the middle, the annoying middle class. Okay, so that's one thing to mention. I'll get into this more in my upcoming interview with a special guest who will be revealed soon. I'm sure you'll find out about it when the video actually drops later this week. The second thing to say is, why instead of comparing, instead of making up a scenario, right, and saying, well, what about this made up scenario? Why don't you look at what actually happened, which is an increase of steel production from 4 million tons to 38 million tons? That is what actually happened. And then after Stalin died, it dropped off. They didn't continue with that rate of growth after Stalin, right? Because Khrushchev was more interested in consumerism and trying to ape what America was doing and all sorts of other stupid ideas. So I prefer to look at what actually happened, not what may have happened or some cloud cuckoo world that we've just made up. What actually happened? It's like saying, oh, the Industrial Revolution was great, but like, what if it had been communist? Nobody ever does that. So I don't really understand. Let's just look at what happened. Sancho Mamarquez says, or Sancho Meme Mark says, this is on the Tucker Carlson takes down Mark Levin and Ben Shapiro in Epic Feud video. He says, I think the fact that the People's Pundit has come out on this side is very significant because whatever else one might say about him, he knows the US electorate. Absolutely. I have been very surprised by him and Robert Barnes in particular, and some other people, Viva Fry, and that whole, like, there's a whole bunch of people who, if you'd asked me before, I'd be like, yeah, these guys are just grifters. These, you know, they're just MAGA grifters. They're going to come out on the side of Israel no matter what. That has not been the case. So I've been really surprised. People's Pundit in particular, because I always thought he was I always had the inkling that he was an honest guy, that he was not grifting. And it's just nice to, when your intuitions are rewarded in that sort of way, you know. Paulin Paul Unsford says, this is a super thanks on UO 10.1, that's Unpopular Opinions, Season 10, Episode 1, Trump releases 12-page statement, Kavanaugh assassination attempt. We're going back through the mists of time, back to 2018 there. He says, this opening marks the transition, beginning with a remix of the original, a Black Dobby in reference to the Christmas opening, when the first instance of Why Do You Let Me Stay Here, best scattered of any opening. This is the beginning of truly great openings. Was Chris Gard involved in this one? 5 of 7. So this guy, Paul Unsford, has left 7 super chats reviewing various different openings of the old Unpopular Opinion show. Paul Unsford, if I can remember correctly, that original one was my own remix. It was my own creation. And then Chris Gard's one was a cover of that. And then the subsequent Chris Gard openings were evolutions of the original cover that he did in different styles. That's how that worked. Although I can't see your other... I don't see your other super chat, sir. It says you left 7, but I only see 1, unfortunately. Oh, here they are. Hold on. 15 hours. Why does it do that then? Sort by newest. There we are. Oh, here we go. All right. So there's tons of them from this dude. He says, I'm reviewing Unpopular Opinions opening and calling for AA to release them on his AA Gold channel, if it even exists anymore. The first episode was with an opening of Jumbo Saruta's theme. This was on Unpopular Opinions 7, episode 14. If you're new and wondering what he's on about, by the way, I presented a show for years called Unpopular Opinions, which was a very popular show. I had to finish it because I am confined to the daytimes now due to my daughter's sleep schedule and having to try to get her to bed for school and so on. So I've had to rejig my entire life to work in the day and not in the night. And that also meant that I had to finish Unpopular Opinions. But it was a long-running, very popular show. And anyway, if you join the channel at the Busker tier level, you can get the entire archive of the back catalogue. If you get the next one up, you get all of Cigar Stream. And if you get the next two up, you get the top one gets you all 2,000 odd videos that I've ever done for one low, low price. But a lot of people get the next one up because Cigar Stream was also a very popular show that I used to do. I mean, if you enjoy the sort of conversations I've been having recently, like the one I had with Caleb Morpin this morning, or the one with Todd yesterday, Cigar Stream was more kind of big brain talk. Unpopular Opinions was more of a current affair show, slop, served up to slop, I guess you'd say. But anyway, on Unpopular Opinions, Season 7, Episode 14, he says, I'm reviewing the openings. This one was Jumbo Saruta's theme. The longest running opening, because of the greatness of what came, he's ranked it 7 of 7. Right, so there's 7 different openings he's ranked. Then he did that one from season 10. Now season 12, episode 1, he says the best build-up of any opening, jamming song, apples, crimes, pears, crimes, is the best bit of any openings. All right, shall we have this is not going to make a lot of sense. So let's have an actual look at what he's talking about here. See if I can open up. What's the opening he's on about here? So we'll get a blast of the Jumbo Saruta one. Hold on. We'll get a blast of this. Let's have a look. God, when was that? That was from 2021, that particular one. So there we go. And then later on, we've got this one that he's reviewed. Let's see if we can get it. We got this one. So that was that one. What else have we got? We've got this one that he mentioned. Was a pretty good one. That was a pretty good one. He ranked that one. He said that's the number two. That's the second best of all the openings, according to Paul. What else have we got here? We've got the Michael Jackson one. He says, my kids think this is the best one because of the incredible Michael Jackson impression from Chris Gard. Let's have a little watch of this one.
Look, if Rishi does resign, you know, I would have thought.
Let's have a look. Zero seats.
Very nice.
Amazing work from Chris Gar, that was. But I don't see, like, the number one. We've got this one from season 11 that he's picked out as number four. What's your number one pick, mate? What's your number one pick? Something like that. I now remember what that was. The guy is wondering what that wah, wah, wah comes from. I think it comes from the end credits of some obscure 80s thing about a library that I put in one of the Ashes of Civilization things. A very obscure reference, it has to be said. So there we go. And then he hasn't got the number one song of Gar. He hasn't got the number one opening for some reason. But he does a comment on A Talking Turley, my short lived miniseries where I critiqued Steve Turley videos. This was an absolutely brilliant. Talk Turley. Talk Turley. Take some time to come and look, my friends, at some awesome conservative trends on the Democrat implosion never ends. Leave out back for now, don't you leave. All the news you'll never believe. Now's time to give it over to Steve. Talk Turley. Amazing. Amazing. Oh, man. Memories, eh? How we laughed, eh? How we all laughed. Unfortunately, I've noticed that there's a ton of other super thanks that have now come in after I refreshed it and made it into newest. I had just by relevant. That guy's number one pick has not come through for some reason. But Coney on how Trump's return killed the intellectual dissident right has simply said, welcome back to Cigar Stream. So there we go. I mean, if you pick up a membership, there are literally thousands of hours of amazing old shows and videos like that Talking Dirty One and stuff that you'll find in the archives. Better than Netflix, I'm telling you. Better than Netflix. So what else have we got? Why neoliberalism destroy Western manufacturing? Piotr says, I saw a recent example of this new economic logic in Tony Blair Institute's latest report on carbon removals, calling on governments to use public money to kickstart what it openly describes as a carbon removal industry, meaning paying private firms to build machines that will extract carbon dioxide from the atmosphere and then bury it underground. It is framed as an essential pillar of the green transition rather than relying on lifestyle changes or emission cuts alone. States should purchase vast quantities of negative emissions to balance their books and meet net zero targets. By the middle of the century, the Tony Blair Institute expects these technologies to be capable of removing several billion tons of CO2 every year, quantities large enough to warrant an entire global supply chain. Governments are then urged to build this market almost from scratch, establishing definitions, regional registries, and long-term procurement schemes to guarantee a buyer for what would otherwise have no intrinsic demand. It would be one of the first industries whose core output is immaterial, a FUD, a pure synthetic market. Lots of takeaways to be had by the emerging green managerialists. That sounds absolutely insane, Piotr. It sounds absolutely insane to me, if that is the case. All right, I think that'll do for the super thanks. There were lots of them. If I've missed any, apologies. Here are the super chats. JS says, Kevin Logan, what year is it? 2014? Is AA about to announce, hello everyone, and welcome to this week in stupid? Well, it's funny running into Kevin Logan again and hearing him talk sense. Coney says, I can't believe I feel compelled to defend an organization I have mistrusted since Gamergate and hated since Brexit. If Auntie B wants more sympathy, she should make all of her archives public. I'd agree with that. I love the BBC archive. It's one of the reasons I'm defending it, of course. He also says, if Israel and Zionism put the woke away, did the Ukraine war and high energy costs put the green away, judging by Bill Gates's latest open letter? Perhaps that also happened. A few more super chats. Terry says, now that you're centre left, would you do a video on the lies that are told about the UK welfare system? I'll send some info on the natural rights email. Do so, Terry. I will have a look at the welfare system. If you send me some info, I'll certainly have a look at it. Can't promise anything. C123 says, have you checked in with Dan Tubbs to see if he's still loving the job his hero Scott Bessant is doing in the US? Does he feel like he's winning yet? Well, you'll have to check with Dan Tubbs on that. If you can remember that debate, you're going to have to check in with Dan Tubbs. I haven't really been paying much attention to what's happened since. Maybe he's right. I don't know. Ornithology Rock says, this is a very disappointing display from the right. What do you expect? You should have no expectations of them because a system is what it does and the UK right is what it does. What is the UK right? It is Thatcherite. It is headbanging. It is emotional. It is Zionist. It is Israel first. That's one of the many reasons why I'm on the center left. It is iconoclastic. It is Thatcherite and iconoclastic. It hates the fact that there are institutions that aren't market run. It's one of the reasons it's got a hard on for destroying the BBC. But anyway, he says, emotionally driven reasoning, zero consideration of second-order effect, another symbolic victory at the expense of a strategic one down the line. Over and over again, ornithology rocks. Remember, right, if there's one thing I want you to remember from this stream, your anger, their agenda. Principled Uncertainty says, it's a conspiracy theory until you ask questions. Indeed. Christian Troy says, when are you going to stream another Crisis in the Kremlin on AA Gaming? Restore glory to the Soviet Union. Christian Troy, if I had, I don't even have time to play 10 minutes of Dead Cells on my Steam Deck. But, you know, I get about 15 minutes playing, it's time for me to go to bed again. Oh, it's terrible, I tell you. I need to like have a day of the week set aside for gaming or doing stuff I want to do, really. Just too busy. TP says, watching Hammer horror films, Peter Cushing is brilliant. I recommend The Dark Water, Japanese, and The Wailing, Korean. If you go back to last year, I did three whole special feature-length documentaries on Hammer horror. Right, I put a lot of work into that Hammer horror thing. So go back and watch it if you haven't seen it. Big Cover 22 says, for academic agency consideration, architecture, Greek and Roman history, all video bangers of late. Adam Curtis, always the best. Thank you very much. A lot of people have been loving the videos of late. Huge amount of people have said superb quality videos. Well, I can only go by the feedback. Thank you very much. And there's been a lot of newcomers this past month as well. If you're one of those newcomers, welcome. And if you're wondering, yes, I am always as grumpy and cantankerous as this. Always. Don't think if you come in from the left, I'm just going to be nice. I'm not going to just change what I'm like for you. TP says, taking steel production output alone is distorted. What about what other range of goods? If it were a German board game, you'd lose points wide. Still, good job, Joe. Yeah, okay, fair enough. Dengism with Dengist character. But the point is, TP, is that what Stalin was trying to do was build an engine room, right? He was trying to build an engine room on which the Russian economy could then go on. And it's still the basis of the Russian economy today. Whatever success Putin has had, the foundations were laid by Iron Joe. Dengism with Dengist characteristics says, thanks for last week's Althusser video. A far more thoughtful treatment of Louis than most supposed Marxists give. Planning a video and Substack response. I look forward to that, Dengism, with Dengist characteristics. Send it to me. I will also note that if you go back to that video, Paul Cockshott has left a very long and thoughtful reply, which I have pinned. So if you're interested in what Cockshott had to say, he comes back. He accuses Althusser of idealism. I am not really concerned with that. I'm more concerned with, is Althusser actually describing what actually happens? Cockshott says, yes, Althusser is concerned with the political struggle. What I'm saying is the political struggle is more than simply a set of beliefs. It is an entire eco. It's like the water that you swim in and you're a goldfish. Right. So it's not even a case of what your beliefs are. It is the very fact that you're framing your beliefs in the way that you are at all. Right. It's a very difficult thing to get your head around. Principled Uncertainty says, I have spent quite some time trying to disprove a certain uncomfortable hypothesis. No matter how I approached it, I faced delusion, deception, and aggression. Telling. Well, maybe you're experiencing cognitive dissonance, sir. Big Cover has gifted 10 academic agent memberships. That's very kind of you. If you've got one of those, you've got literally, like I said earlier, thousands of hours to explore. Cringe Walker says, I can't wait for conservatives to blame anti-Israel sentiments for losing next year, even as the Dems win in anti-Zion candidates, fake though they are. Absolutely. Lionel Gritchie says, law are anti-asylum messaging linked to war in Gaza? I don't know about the anti-asylum bit. I don't know about that bit of it, Lionel. So that is it for super thanks, super chats, and everything else. I'll go off and prepare for this interview that I'm going to have on. We're going to be talking all about China and whether China really is still socialist or communist, and what it's like there, and why people hate to admit that it's done well, and all of that. So that's going to be interested to see how that interview is. One, I'm interested to see how it goes. I'm also interested to see how it's received. So I'm going to go off and do that. Pick up a course at the Academic Agency. The guy who was trying to leave helpful comments about the thumbnails, I now feel some regret about being such an arsehole to you. I'm just like that, though. You've got to remember, I'm easily irritated. So sorry about that. Let me finish this Monte Cristo. Put up my feet for 10 minutes and have a think about things. And I'll see you all next time. Bye, everyone.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Well, that's easily fixed.